More healthcare organizations are adopting AI, including smaller businesses and practices. I'm Ron Southwick, lead editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. In this episode of Healthy Bottom Line, we talk with Liz Wilkie, the Chief Economist of Business Intelligence for Chase. We talk about how companies are using artificial intelligence and how business leaders should be thinking about AI. We also talk about cybersecurity, the impact of tariffs, uncertainty in the economy, and why many healthcare companies are still very optimistic. It's a great discussion. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Healthy Bottom Line. Well, thank you so much for joining us today here at Healthy Bottom Line. We are talking with Liz Wilkie of Chase, Chief Economist of Business Intelligence for Chase. Liz, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Hi, Ron. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, there was an interesting study that Chase did not too long ago, getting some trends from business leaders at the mid-year, asking for different thoughts on what's happening. There were some really interesting healthcare takeaways as well. So wanted to touch base with you about one of the things that surprised me a little bit. Maybe it wasn't a surprise to you. It was about healthcare being one of the leaders in AI adoption, because so often in the healthcare industry, often the thought is that sometimes they're not as quick to embrace technology as some other sectors are. But when it comes to AI, at least from what your survey's finding, healthcare is right up there in terms of other sectors, in terms of their adoption of AI.
Yeah, that's right. So just to give a little bit more context, we at Chase, we care a lot about small businesses. They're a huge part of the economy, and it's really essential to understand them. So we do run a regular survey of business leaders to sort of take their pulse and see what they're interested in, what they're concerned about, the kinds of things that they're doing. And so that's the source of what we'll talk about today. Healthcare in particular, I was actually not surprised about, and I'll tell you why. I think there are lots of forces in healthcare today that are really driving a focus on costs and retention and reducing burden on staff. So burnout is a real serious issue, and attrition is a real serious issue in healthcare. And also the documentation requirements to integrate with insurance, to keep patient notes, et cetera, are large and growing, especially with the increasing adoption of medical records and standards. And also, smaller healthcare providers, smaller businesses in particular, I think really also, one of their major costs is labor. And one of the tricky things about lots of healthcare models is that you can't, it's very hard to scale people, so you really need to focus on efficiencies with those people where you can. And also, healthcare has a lot of use cases that are really ripe for AI. So text transcription for note-taking to integrate into electronic health records. There's lots of evidence that AI is getting better at diagnostics and screening, so that you could have an in-demand specialist write review 1,000 files instead of 300 files in a day, and you can really use AI in lots of ways to enhance the productivity of the people that are working in these healthcare settings. And so I think that I was actually not surprised, because there's such a demand and a scarcity for people in healthcare, generally speaking, and there's also a lot of use cases that AI is particularly well suited for that are repeatable, kind of boring for people, prone to error, et cetera, where I think AI tools really excel in taking that burden off of the humans that are doing a lot of the care labor and just automating that to free up their time to do more of that human work that's so essential to quality caregiving in healthcare.
It seems like, especially from some of the healthcare conferences I've been to, there's a lot of excitement about AI, especially like you already mentioned, streamlining some tasks that are repetitive and mind-numbing, and kind of simplifying some tasks for positions where healthcare organizations have trouble filling some of those jobs anyway. So if they can take some of that burden off the workers and then put workers onto things that matter more, where you really need a human touch, it seems to make some sense.
Yeah, and I would say, Ron, looking forward a little bit, I think that those forces only accelerate. So there are lots of forecasts about, the gap that we'll see in healthcare providers into 2030 and 2037. I think I was looking at a report from 2024 that says that there is going to be a shortage of, I think it's 170,000-ish shortfall in just direct physicians. And so when we think about, how tight labor is in healthcare now, that problem only gets worse. And so I think there is going to be even more space for technology like AI to really step in and help fewer people, in fact, serve a larger aging population that has bigger needs.
You talked about the shortage of physicians, which has been a problem already and only figures to grow. There's been shortage of nurses. I've yet to talk to a healthcare leader that says they aren't having a problem with recruiting and retaining nurses. It just continues to be a really thorny issue for a lot of health systems. And it seems like it's only going to get worse when you have factor in a lot of the healthcare workforce right now are in their 50s. I mean, they are not too far away from when they might be ready to retire, at least maybe ready to do something different in life. So that's only going to put more pressure if you have an aging population and potentially a shrinking healthcare workforce.
Yeah. And you know, a very optimistic corollary to that is you can think that, you know, you need to fill that pipeline with younger people who are going to be more digitally savvy, more interested in integrating digital tools, and who will be less accustomed to kind of doing it the way it was always done. So that even may open up opportunities for more expansion of AI adoption in order to affect those bottom lines and to help keep a lot of these small practices, especially, you know, solvent and operating and caring for people in their communities.
You can tell we're recording this podcast on a Friday because we already have an uptick than an optimistic outlook too. So the corollary there sounds
That's
good.
right.
So, we talked about the burnout though. I mean, that still seems to be a lot of healthcare leaders are worried about the stress on their staff, even getting through the worst of the pandemic with things getting a little bit more stable. But there's still that seems to be a real concern for a lot of healthcare leaders, the stress in their staffs and the health of their workforce.
Yeah, and I think this is where, you know, AI and the labor force really intersect in healthcare, especially. So there was a big jump during the pandemic in burnout among health workers. I think that's surprising to exactly zero people, given the level of stress on that system. But even since, you know, the pandemic has subsided, there are elevated rates of burnout, especially among certain practices that are higher than pre-pandemic levels of burnout. So that is, which were already high among lots of professions. So it is a sort of serious and endemic problem. One of the factors that I hear anecdotally that I'm sure could be confirmed by people who are much closer is that, you know, just the mass of work and documentation and administrative work that goes along with the care, right? No, nobody I've ever talked to said that they got into healthcare because they love filling out forms and engaging with insurance payout processes. They really want to be doing the work of providing care and helping people to be well and to take care of themselves. And I think that one of the contributors to burnout, anecdotally, is that it is this sort of large administrative burden and just the mass of work that needs to be done, taking focus away from the patient and away from what people find really engaging about this kind of work. And again, those are use cases where AI has a really compelling comparative advantage. And, you know, to do document processing, to do medical transcription, to do, you know, all of those things, I think really does have the potential to both help the cost structure as humans become more scarce and more valuable in this labor market, but then also to help ad address some of the burnout challenges, right, that people have and some of those documentation and administrative items that do seem to contribute to burnout.
This Chase survey also found surveyed healthcare leaders about some of their top concerns, and the cost of healthcare seemed to top the list, even above inflation. So obviously, concern for consumers as well that are paying more and more for the healthcare. But it seems like there's a real recognition that the cost of care is a real problem among for healthcare organizations.
Yeah, the cost of care, as you said, does affect both sides of this equation. It affects the input costs, right? It affects the cost of people. You know, I don't think we fully know what the effects of tariffs and the changing tariff structure are for medical supplies, many of which are imported, for instance. So that I think is weighing on healthcare providers sort of across the board to a greater or lesser extent, and they are concerned about those costs, particularly the costs of people as the demand increases and the supply decreases, right? That is gonna sustain cost pressure on the people working in that environment. But then also, I think people are mindful that employers who are not in healthcare are also facing rising healthcare costs, and there are these question marks about how will other businesses, right, that buy healthcare for their employees, right, respond? And will you see a drop there? From our survey, we actually found increased interest in employers offering better and more prevalent healthcare benefits to their employees. It's widely accepted that this is a really important benefit that employees look for, and it's a good mechanism for talent attraction and recruitment, and it reduces attrition. And so a lot of employers, in fact, are not looking to reduce their healthcare offerings. They're in fact looking to increase their healthcare offerings. And so I think on both sides, there is this recognition that costs are a real concern. But this is an essential service that is valuable, both to healthcare providers and to the people that consume healthcare.
Let's talk a little bit about tariffs, because I think a lot of Americans don't understand how many medical supplies are imported from other countries overseas, or even like the ingredients of pharmaceuticals or components of medical devices that we rely on foreign producers to send to us. How concerned are folks about tariffs? Obviously, there's still a lot of uncertainty around them, but it seems like, at least from some of the folks I've talked to, there's real concern, even as we don't know the full impact of them, and policy can change from Washington pretty quickly of late. But from your perspective, how concerned are folks about tariffs?
I think this the answer to this question varies widely according to the business model. So the healthcare sector, as you know, is really varied, right? Includes big hospitals all the way down to dental hygienists and mental health providers and home healthcare aides. But for businesses that use, like you said, pharmaceuticals, medical devices, even PPE, and just sort of generally anything that you would find in a doctor's office is pretty likely to be imported, all things equal. And so I think a lot, and I think it also depends on how much of your cost structure are these supplies, right? So a hospital is going to use a lot more supplies than a therapist, for instance, right? I honestly think therapists are not that concerned about tariffs, but I think that, outpatient medical services are probably very, right, interested in the cost of tariffs to their bottom line. So you could think even if imported materials, from the highest tariffed countries that you could think of are only 15% of your costs, if those costs double, right, that's a non-trivial it's a non-trivial amount of pressure on your margin. So the answer to that really varies, but I think there's on added on to that a lot of uncertainty. So we don't actually know yet what the tariff rate will be for a lot of goods because there have been delays and countries are trying to make deals in order to come to a good solution for everyone. And so I think a lot of the concern around tariffs is related both to the potential impacts on the cost structure, but actually, probably more related to the uncertainty because business owners in this industry have to make decisions. Do I import a lot of PPE today and have it sit around and have to find something to do with it? What if costs actually don't increase? Then I will kind of lose out. Or, maybe I should just wait and try and build up my working capital to pay for it as it comes. And I think it's those kinds of decisions that are really weighing on businesses right now related to tariffs.
You mentioned uncertainty, and that's what I've heard more and more from talking to different healthcare executives and industry analysts too, is like there's a lot of uncertainty for healthcare organizations and businesses of every sector. But that's something that seems to drive some executives worry them the most. I mean, it's one thing if you know what the environment's going to be, good or bad, but when you're not certain about like tariff policies or some other things, that's when businesses can be really a little bit perplexed. Just from your perspective, is that uncertainty, is that really on the minds of healthcare leaders, maybe business leaders more generally?
It wouldn't be right of me to call out healthcare leaders as people that are unduly burdened by this uncertainty, mostly because this uncertainty is very pervasive across the business segment, and particularly for small business owners who will not be able to negotiate exemptions, right, to the tariff lines, and who will not be able to negotiate, right, sort of any sort of special accommodation. They kind of have to take what's given to them, and there is a lot of uncertainty about what will happen. I think, and we see that, and so what we actually sort of see is a lot of concern coupled with a lot of optimism, and that isn't indicative from our survey that businesses are very attentive to these risks. But so far, they are mostly risks, not yet realities for a lot of businesses. And so, even though there are elevated concerns around tariffs and rising costs, most businesses are actually very optimistic about their future revenues because they do see we are in an economy with strong fundamentals and a relatively strong consumer, and healthcare is an essential service. And so, those things are actually tailwinds for this industry, even as there is a lot of uncertainty and a lot of concern.
And I've talked to a few folks even after the passage of, the big tax package, often called the One Big Beautiful Bill. Some folks have been saying, like, at least now there's a little bit more understanding of what to expect for healthcare organizations and probably businesses across the board. Like now that, with that being passed, now there's a little bit of more of a path where people can kind of start making some plans.
Yeah, that's right. So not in the survey that we're talking about today, Ron, but we also run a monthly survey of business owners, and we did ask specific questions about how much business owners knew about certain parts of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and how they thought it would affect their business. And most business owners are relatively knowledgeable about the parts that are in the bill. I think somewhere between 1 in 4 and 1 in 3 business owners still don't know exactly what is in the bill, but there's plenty of time for them to consult their tax advisor. And I would put out a little shout out that if you do not yet know what is in the bill, please consult your tax advisor because there are large changes that are probably impactful for your business. And so I would encourage you to reach out to someone who can help you through that. But that did provide, I think, a lot of certainty about what to expect, especially for tax treatment and tax implications, which are a very large part of businesses' financial models and how profitable they ultimately are or aren't. And so I think that is a very it is a promising bit of stability to have that set in place so that businesses can actually at least plan on that, even as there are many other things that they cannot plan for at this point.
Well, Chase also surveyed concerns about cybersecurity, and that's going to be a top concern among healthcare leaders, which sort of makes sense. There have been literally hundreds of data breaches involving healthcare organizations over the past few years. I guess 22% of leaders surveyed citing it as a concern. It seems that this is something that's pretty top of mind for a lot of organizations.
It is. And I think in healthcare, especially because there are such strong data protections for the type of data that healthcare providers are often in contact with, and there are such strict penalties. I think that is complicated also in healthcare a little bit by the use of AI, other technology capabilities, payment processors, et cetera. But the healthcare providers are responsible ultimately in many cases for how this data is used and how they allow it to be used. And so there's an increasing amount of data out there to keep track of. And that causes a lot of concern for healthcare providers who are trying, I think, very, very rightly to do a good job and to be compliant with the large data protection requirements that are on them to protect patients. And so, as technology advances, there are going to be more and more ways for cybersecurity scams, fraud, payment schemes, data breaches to affect even a pretty small practice, which I think is driving a lot of the elevated concern around these issues. And I suspect that a growing number of healthcare providers actually have personal experience now, where, somebody tried to defraud their patient or breach some of their data, and they actually had to deal with that. And so I think that is a very real and legitimate concern given how strong the data protections are for this particular set of data.
And you mentioned that a small organization, I'm really glad you, because I mean, even small health systems or hospitals or practices have thousands or tens of thousands of patient records that are obviously very attractive to ne'er-do-wells and people looking to sell things in the dark web or just to cause problems. So, I mean, and we've seen some evidence that there's some cybersecurity experts saying smaller organizations are becoming increasing targets for some of these groups too, because maybe not as big a payday, but probably not a whole lot of effort you're going to have to expend to break into their system. So it seems like this, if you're a small organization, not so sure you should just assume you're safe.
Yeah, I think the fact that it is a leading concern for a little over a fifth of the businesses in our survey means that it can't just all be large organizations that are the targets of these kinds of attacks, and they are increasingly filtering down to smaller organizations, and that it is becoming, as a result, a much stronger concern sort of across the industry.
That's one of those, maybe just I've written too many stories about cybersecurity attacks and stuff, but that's one number I wish was a little bit higher than the 22. I wouldn't mind that being 200%, because it's such a big disruptive problem, and especially now seeing it more at big organizations, but also at small organizations too. Just it can be just really, and especially for a small organization, it can be devastating to financially and also to their business operations too.
Well, and I think you've raised an important point, Ron, which is that there is a big risk if your data is breached and you are absorbed in all of that. But even if that never happens and you are putting in protections in place to protect that data and it never happens to you or your practice that you are breached or you do have that financial loss, there is an amount of time and energy and money that has to go into building a protective architecture around your data that does affect, right, the financial models of lots of these healthcare providers in this space. And that affects, right, how profitable they ultimately are. So the increased need to protect this data also creates increased requirements to build into your operating model, right, the costs associated with protecting that data.
Well, as we said, we are recording on a Friday afternoon, so looking for the positive and looking for some good news. But one thing that was interesting in their survey is like the number of healthcare leaders, medical services leaders, it says they are still planning to grow ahead. And you talked about that there's still a lot of optimism in the industry, but talk more about that in terms of the number of organizations that are still looking and making plans to grow, even with some of the uncertainty that's out there.
I mean, I think that's again, it's really indicative not of the fact that we are in a bad position, just that there's a lot of unknowns and a lot of things to respond to. And I think that what's sort of happening is I use this quote often from, I think it's Dwight D. Eisenhower said, "Plans are useless. Planning is essential." And I think that's kind of the space that a lot of business owners are in, which is there's a lot of uncertainty. Anything could happen. Nothing will happen probably like you expect it to. So the thing to do is, to make a plan, to review it, to understand what you're going to do. And I think businesses that are doing that, I think are responding by saying, I don't know what's going to happen, but I feel very good that I'm equipped, that my business is equipped to respond to whatever happens. And in a number of scenarios, I think I come out okay, right? Because I have what I need to respond to that. And I think that's due in part, again, healthcare is an essential service. We have a sort of strong, pretty resilient consumer all the way through. And that is, I think, showing and driving a lot of healthcare optimism, which is that the environment is changing. New tools are coming in at their disposal to help them manage costs, to help them manage the administrative burden. And also, there's just a growing demand for this set of services, both in the short and in the long term. And I think that is pushing a lot of optimism, even in a time of uncertainty. And also, I mean, I could put in the standard line that small business owners are like the most optimistic, forward-thinking people, right, that you can imagine, because I think you have to be that kind of person in order to start and run your own business in the first place. And so they are, I think, generally more disposed to think about how do I react to this situation in a beneficial way. And I think we're just really seeing that reaction in this data.
You mentioned the importance of planning, even if plans have to be discarded. It almost makes me wonder for healthcare or even just business in general, but especially in healthcare, how much long-term planning can you do? Because I've talked to healthcare leaders that talk about 5-year plans. I've also talked to healthcare leaders say there's really no point in doing a 5-year plan anymore because the business is just changing too rapidly. So I'd just love from your perspective, how far out can you plan ahead in a constantly changing environment?
I think that really depends on your specific business model and, your own goals for the business. So I'm not trying exactly to dodge your question, except I'm probably going to end up dodging your question, which is I think it really is sort of dependent on the individual. I've heard everything from 5-year plans are fine as long as you're happy to, change things around, or no plans at all. I've also heard that there's sort of a sweet spot between, plan with detail for the next 6 months to a year, set a North Star or a vision about where you want to be, right, for somewhere between 2 and 5 years, so that you know what your guiding light is as a business and sort of where you want to be, but you're open to the flexibility of the reality that things don't always happen the way you want. But again, I would say it really depends on, everything from being like a private single person therapist in an office to being, a home health care service to being a dentist's office. I think the goals that every one of those people have for their business and the tools that are going to become available to them, I think are going to be too different to really tell them what is a good planning horizon for them.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground and not a lot of time. Anything else that healthcare leaders should be thinking about, either from information in the survey or even some of the other work that you're doing, even just anecdotally, like what are some other things that healthcare leaders, maybe especially leaders of small healthcare business, what should they be thinking about going forward?
I actually think we sort of covered a lot of it. I'll just sort of try and tie it together with a bow, which is that healthcare is a huge industry, which is good in the sense that all the other B2B serving sectors would like to serve healthcare by solving real pressing business problems that they have. And the increasing digitalization and availability of AI tools is going to make it easier, particularly for small businesses in this space, to use big technology on their scale. And I would really encourage people that are, owning or thinking about their small practice or their small business in this space to really think strategically about how and when to integrate AI and other technology tools in order to protect their bottom line, to relieve the stress of the people that work for them, in order to, maintain high quality of service and to keep the people that are really building your business. And then again, to sort of have that plan for where you want to go. What you don't want to be doing is reacting to a technology. It's not an empowering place for a business to be generally. And I think anecdotally, I've heard a lot of businesses feel like they are reacting to technology that is coming at them. And I think there's a way to flip that, which is that there is a lot coming at you, but thinking about how to make that technology fit into your vision instead of adjusting the vision to fit the technology is the sort of the best way I could sum all that.
You wrapped up the bow very nicely on that discussion. So that was great. Well, we've been talking with Liz Wilkie of Chase. Thanks so much for taking time. I really enjoyed the discussion.
Thanks, Ron. It was my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Healthy Bottom Line, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For the latest healthcare news, compelling features, and deeper dives, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X. I'm Ron Southwick, lead editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Take care.